Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Matthew Appleby, Horticulture Week editor, and this is the Horticulture Week podcast. And today I'm with Marion Regan of strawberry grower Hugh Lowe Farms. Marion is the daughter of the late Hugh Lowe and owns the Kent Grower with her husband, John Regan. The grower is the sole supplier of strawberries to the British tennis tournament at Wimbledon, which is happening this month. Now, in 2020, Wimbledon was called off because of the COVID-19 pandemic. But this year, it's all back on and 1 million berries could be served up at the tournament. But first of all, Marion, you've been running the business for 25 years this year. Is that right?
Oh, good morning, Matthew. Well, yes, you're the first person to point that out. So I guess I ought to have at the very least a cake or something. But yes, I mean, I grew up on the farm, so I've been involved with the business for longer than that. But I have been running it for that length of time. Yes,
brilliant time to celebrate. But back in 2020 there was no Wimbledon, sadly, because of the pandemic. So were you able to find other outlets for the strawberries you usually send to Wimbledon?
Well, you know, the All England Club are a fantastic event to supply and a terrific customer, and they of course kept in close touch with us all throughout. Because of the way the season fell last year, we were able to pretty much sell what we'd earmarked for the tournament into other outlets. But we also were able to support them in distributing parcels to the local charities. They did a work with City Harvest, and also they diverted some of our strawberries into making jam, and also a collaboration with Sip Smith Gin, and they've made a fantastic strawberry smash gin, which I think they're going to keep making, actually, because I think it's proved to be quite a hit.
Brilliant. Okay, well, I'm glad they found homes. But how important is, and we talk a lot about Wimbledon and tennis and you, but how important is Wimbledon to you?
Well, to me personally, it's a very special, because not just that I love tennis, but also it's been such an iconic event my whole strawberry growing life. I think any strawberry grower would credit the Wimbledon Championships with just putting our product in the public's eye at a critical time of year. Of course, it's quite historical, the connection. The traditional peak of the English strawberry season used to be when Wimbledon was on, and so people tend to associate strawberries with high summer. Of course, now we're producing strawberries all summer long, in fact, much longer than that. On this farm, we're growing from April through to November. The first 2 weeks of July are not necessarily the only peak of the strawberry season, but nevertheless, having that association with the tournament is just terrific for our business. It gets everybody together. Everyone from all over the world has heard of Wimbledon. So if you're on the crew picking fruit for the championships, then you're most likely to feel a personal connection as well as a professional. So I think it's a great boost for all of us here.
Brilliant. Now, what's the plan for supplying 2021's Wimbledon tournament?
Well, they're going to have a more limited event necessarily, but they're going ahead. And of course, it means that there will be fantastic quality tennis also on the telly. So I think last year, people got used to sort of some celebrations at home allied with big events. I mean, that's what's happening with the Euros now, isn't it? So I think as growers of soft fruit, I think we're hoping that people will also recreate their Wimbledon strawberry tea in their own gardens and watching the tennis, even if they're not able to actually go along. I guess there won't be the huge crowds and the queues to get into the tournament. There won't be the crowds on the Murray Mound. There will probably still be people participating, but more remotely at home. And as we're all used to doing now, that's probably not going to go away.
No, indeed. So what sort of uplift in sales do you usually expect to see?
Well, it's hard to actually quantify that because it's such a long association for so many years. There's always been this expectation that in the Wimbledon fortnight there will be lots of strawberries on sale. And I think our other retail customers sort of time things to go with that. And so it's actually hard to say year on year what the uplift in sales is. I wouldn't want to be pressed on quantifying it other than to say it's pretty much when you go to the supermarket in the month of June, a large number of the people ahead of you in the queue will have a punnet or two of strawberries in their shopping.
No, brilliant. No, it's certainly the time of year for it. Now, last year and in previous years, but particularly post-Brexit now, labour has been a massive issue for fresh produce growers, everybody in the industry, really. How have you found sourcing labour last year and now this year?
Yes, well, so far this year, we're okay. We have a large number of people who applied to the settled status scheme who've come back to us and obviously through quarantining and so on have managed to meet all of the requirements. So we're okay so far, but we're picking up signs. There are a slightly lower rate of people coming back, either due to COVID or perhaps because of the squeeze in labour availability generally. There are other roles in the economy that people with settled status can take. We're also finding that just at this particular moment, there seems to be a little bit of bureaucratic holdup in people transiting through other European Union countries to get here due to COVID colour coding of countries. That's causing an issue which might just be, for some people, the straw that breaks the camel's back. If you're expecting a certain number of people, you might have to factor in that some will not actually be able to get here. And then, of course, UK resident workers are pretty thin on the ground, and that's not for want of trying to recruit them. So I think my answer is it's really tight. We're okay, but I think we're seeing very much the need for the seasonal workers programme, which we're participating in, and possibly alleviation in other sectors of the economy, so that could mean that some of our settled status workers will be more inclined to come back to us rather than go and work in other sectors.
Oh, I see. So how did the UK worker recruitment go last year? Did you manage to get many?
Actually, we did have quite a nice two or three teams of UK resident workers. We generally found that, you know, there's a reason why people don't necessarily want to take fruit picking work. And it's because it starts at 5 a.m. or 5:30 a.m. It's long hours. You need to be really staying on the farm to make it work for you. And it's actually quite a long commitment. Our season is very long. So I can understand why there was a bit of a mismatch between how it was portrayed in the media as a sort of darling buds of May, lovely bucolic treat, help out the farmers, and the reality, which is hard work, remunerative, but hard work, which you have to commit to over quite a long period of time. So we found that actually it was better to recruit people for perhaps other roles on the farm, non-harvest roles, where they could start a little bit later in the day and be supervised perhaps in a different way. We tried to be flexible, and that's what we're trying to do this year as well.
Great. Now on to another issue. I talked to Signify about LED lighting for strawberries year-round production recently for a Hort Week podcast. What's your views on that area?
Well, we do have glasshouses, and so we do long season production. We have been actively looking at a lit crop, and we'll be trialling that next year. We've taken some great advice from people who've been able to model out what might be the best use of energy, and it's all tied in really with our approach to energy, and you know, we are on a path to net zero carbon emissions, and we need to switch more to renewable sources of energy and increase our productivity. At the moment, it's physically possible to produce some lovely soft fruit crops under LED lights. It's not financially possible for us yet, but we're very interested in growing over a much longer season, so we are actively looking at it.
So how do you make it financially possible? What do you need to change?
Well, I think we'll see quite a change in the cost and the incentives in switching to different sources of energy. I think that we will see advances in LED technology, which should bring the price down and maybe the energy use down. So that's really what we're looking at. We're also looking at photovoltaics, agrivoltaics. So this is looking at, I mean, this is a bit novel, but looking at using solar panels that are actually transmissible to light so that you can grow crops underneath those. So that's a project that we're actively doing as well, but that's probably one for another podcast, Matthew.
Well, that's one for the future indeed. It's all for the future, isn't it? And
yes,
this net zero carbon neutrality is so much on the agenda, you know, with the G7 summit and all that type of thing. So what else are you doing around that area? What else can you do?
Well, do you know, you're absolutely right. You could spend your whole day going down rabbit holes on this. And I think farmers and growers are actually in a bit of a bind and quite confused about which is the best route to take on this. My view is that the growers and farmers are actually the originators of the reduced emissions. And that we are the people that need to actually use a really engage in getting reduced emissions into the supply chain. I think at the moment there's rather a lot of box ticking and proxy tools being used to basically instruct us as to what we should be doing without really giving us the the information about what we can do on our own holdings. So we've decided to look at a real bottom-up approach and to get data from our own farm establish where we are to start with, and then to get a route map to net zero from there. And that involves a real focus on energy efficiency, switch to renewables, but also critically a big focus on productivity. So getting more out of every input that we're putting in. And of course, as we're also have quite a lot of arable land, only a third of the farm is producing soft fruit. Just shy of another third is dedicated to wildlife. And then we have arable crops as well. So we have some opportunities for carbon sequestration on our own land. And so we're looking at that as well.
Well, that's good news. So what about government support or even advice? What could they do to help?
Well, I think that that's very much the route everyone's looking at. And I think government support is important. I think they need to give policy direction. The new farm support schemes will probably be very much focused on this. I'm more interested in how to actively engage ourselves in reducing our own emissions, actually looking at our own data instead of being told what we should be doing and being told what we have actually achieved. I would like to actively control what we're doing on net zero, and then to present that to the rest of the supply chains that we're in. Government, I think, can support research in this area and need to put a floor in the support mechanism for carbon-friendly farming and nature-friendly farming. But there's so much more that individual farms can do. Farmers are entrepreneurs, growers are entrepreneurs. And if we can, squeeze an extra bit of productivity out, meet some fairly hefty carbon targets and are incentivized to do it, then we will bend our minds to doing that.
Excellent. Now, talking policy, the AHDB, the levy board, is going. So what do you see as the future for R&D? How would you like that to carry on? Is there anything you want to continue there, or do you think, it's good, it's gone, or what?
Well, gosh, I've been involved with the AHDB on and off for many years, and I was extremely concerned in the way it was heading, not at all surprised at the result of the ballot. I still think that there is some essential and good work that is done pre-competitively for our sector, and I would not want that to be lost. I'm thinking particularly pest and disease research, the need to get emergency approvals, the tackling of alien pests, but also some pre-breeding and varietal development work. I believe that growers should have access to their means of production, and the means of production are good varieties. So I would want to see that continue to be supported, even though I'm also actively involved in private breeding programs as well. So I do think that it's a shame that the ballot went that way. I think there will need to be a research effort that replaces it. I would like to see the recommendations of the Better Levy Group looked at in detail by ministers, and I understand that is what's happening.
Talking of varieties, are you trialling any with strawberries or other crops at the moment?
Oh gosh, we've got lots of things in trial. We've had a trial site for decades, and it's been extremely useful. It means that we can look at new varieties, sometimes still in the pre-release stage, and see how they work under our systems and put them through our Packhouse QC rigors. and really get an idea about what we should be alerting our customers to. So we've got some really interesting ones this year. There's, as you may know, we grow quite a lot of varieties from the Driscoll's program because we market through Berry Gardens. And have the exclusive right to grow those varieties. And there's some interesting ones coming through there. There's a new premium raspberry called Sophie, which we're very pleased with. And we've also got some new strawberry varieties that we're looking at. The Morling, East Morling breeding program has got a new release called Morling Ace, which is very appropriate given that it's tennis month. And that is also looking promising. So those are perhaps and there's also an early June bearer called Morling Vitality, which was useful this year because we've had such an appalling late season.
So Tennis Ace. So hopefully you'll be going to the tennis and it'll all be going ahead in as good a way as possible. Are you going to go, do you think?
Well, if I manage to leave behind the frenetic activity here, I mean the main thing about growing strawberries in June and early July is actually it can be quite a tricky period to produce strawberries. Funnily enough, the sort of great unsaid story is that actually it's extremely difficult to produce reliably strawberries when people think there should be a glut. Everyone always assumes there'll be a glut around Wimbledon, and actually there isn't. There might be this year, but last year was very difficult. So it's not very cost effective producing early season strawberries anymore because of the cost of labour and so on. Mm-hmm. A lot of people now grow everbearer strawberries, which tend to peak later in the season. But I think this year, because it's such a late spring, that actually there will be plenty of strawberries through the month of June and into July. And so it will be quite busy here. But I would love to get away and go to the tennis if we're allowed to under COVID restrictions and so on.
And finally, what plant would you take to a desert island?
Oh, goodness. What plant would I take to a desert island? This is going to be a very boring answer, but I will take a coconut palm because it's a desert island. The coconut is a wonderful fruit which can provide water and coconut, the flesh of the coconut. Plus, I'd be able to use the coir from the surround of the coconut, which I can probably grow stuff in and germinate seeds and so on. So I think I'd better take a coconut palm.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much to Marion Regan from Hulow Farms. And I've been Matthew Appleby for the Horticulture Week podcast. Make sure you never miss one. Subscribe to or follow Horticulture Week podcasts via Apple iTunes, Spotify or Google Podcasts or your preferred podcast platform. So thanks very much. Until next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.